This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, election results. I'll sit down with Carrie Cheshire and Michael Quinn Sullivan to discuss the results from across the state on Tuesday night. Then I'll join Jacob Asmussen, our Central Texas Bureau Chief, to discuss the results in Central Texas before heading over to Houston, chatting with Charles Blaine, our Houston Bureau Chief, to discuss the results in Texas's biggest county. Plus, a commentary from Tony McDonald. What happens when the numbers don't add up on election night? All of this, stay tuned. Welcome back to Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm Brandon Waltons, filling in for Tony McDonald. Lots of election coverage from this week, so let's jump right in. I'm joined right now by Carrie Cheshire with the Texans for Fiscal Responsibility to talk a little bit about the election results we had Tuesday night here. Of course, elections all across the country, but a lot of big important races in the Lone Star State. Big statewide races. I think the biggest one was, of course, the big Senate race, right?
That's right, Brandon. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz running for re-election for the first time, facing a strong challenge by Democrat Congressman Beto O'Rourke of El Paso. One of the most expensive races in Texas state history, with Beto O'Rourke raising bukus of money from the West Coast and the East Coast, bringing it into Texas, all told an $80 million plus campaign, but an unsuccessful campaign to unseat.
Yeah, and $80 million. That is more than has been spent in any Senate race, I think, in history in any state, any party.
Well, it's the most in Texas history for sure, but the big news is that despite the high-dollar price tag, Beto O'Rourke will not be the next senator from the state of Texas. Blue wave, reports on a national level, and we saw some of that in the results Tuesday night, but really in Texas they hit a red wall, and Ted Cruz was reelected by Texans large-scale Tuesday.
And it's very interesting to watch. I mean, when we watched Beto throughout his campaign, I mean, this was not a person who looked like they were running in a state that hadn't elected a Democrat statewide since 1994. I mean, he was taking positions that were basically the Bernie Sanders far left position on issues, be it, open borders or gun control, even advocating for an oil tax that would have increased, the gas tax on Americans and on Texans.
Well, that's right, Brandon. Typically, we see Democrats try to moderate to run in Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Wendy Davis 4 years ago decided that she would say that she was for concealed carry and maybe even open carry as governor, but Beto O'Rourke completely eschewed that. He ran a Bernie Sanders-style campaign, went to all 254 counties in the state, and really barnstormed it with an aggressive pitch for socialized medicine, for the environmental policies that you laid out. And that's what allowed him to raise a lot of money from outside the state, but it really alienated him with a lot of voters here in the state of Texas that are conservative voters.
Yes, and we saw that. Of course, Cruz coming out victorious. Very interesting, though. You would think that if you looked at the news, that the Senate race was the only thing happening. Of course, all the statewides, right? A lot of statewide elections happening. Starting at the top, the governor's race, kind of a non-issue from the start. Not much of a race there.
Well, that's right, Brandon. Greg Abbott running for re-election this first time as well, serving 4 years as governor, previously serving as the Texas Attorney General, where he was really made famous for suing the federal government, suing the Barack Obama administration. But since his election, Greg Abbott's really staked out a very conservative position as governor, supporting property tax reform, spending limits, and really, being more conservative than I think any governor that we've had in a long, long time. He was challenged by Democrat Sanctuary Sheriff Lupe Valdez.
Lupe Valdez from Dallas.
From Dallas County. And we saw, the Dallas County operation of Lupe Valdez, really run a strong operation up there and give Abbott a challenge in Dallas County, which is a solidly blue county. But across the state, Abbott outperformed most Republicans on the ballot against Lupe Valdez, who didn't really run a strong campaign outside of Dallas County. And Greg Abbott, a wildly popular governor with the results that, prove it.
And a big war chest to boot. I mean, you actually saw him, despite the race not really seeming that competitive and ultimately ending up not being that competitive, he was still spending a lot of money to help out his fellow Republicans down the ballot across the state.
Well, that's right, Brandon. You saw Greg Abbott really take up the mantle as the leader of the state Republican Party, really in the primaries from the conservative perspective, going after members who didn't vote for conservative policies in the Texas legislature, and then in the general election, helping Republicans up and down the ballot, mounting a strong and aggressive campaign, despite facing Lupe Valdez, who is, to be honest, an unserious candidate, and other candidates that were, kind of a clown car of candidates, but perhaps more accurately, a clown bus is what we saw of the statewide Democrat
candidates.
candidates.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you actually saw in the weeks leading up to the election, you had Beto out there campaigning, of course, kind of drawing big crowds, certainly drawing the cameras from the big national news stations. And then you had a literal bus of the rest of the Democrat ticket sort of putting along the state, sort of the undercard, you know.
Well, yeah, you know, Democrats don't campaign as fiscal conservatives, but maybe right. They were all on that bus to save money because they couldn't raise anything. No. You saw Beto O'Rourke actually have to come in and supplement the state party because Lupe Valdez and then the lower candidates like Mike Collier, who was mm-hmm. running for lieutenant governor against Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, not able to fundraise, not really able to gain traction.
Let's talk a little bit about
the resources.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that race. We had Dan Patrick, of course, also winning re-election, somebody who has been a strong fighter, led the Senate, the Texas Senate, in passing conservative reform since he was elected in 2014, and really being a conservative leader during the past two legislative sessions. You saw a little bit of a movement from folks on the left side of the spectrum to unseat him, and they thought they had an opportunity here. It's not what actually happened.
Not at all. I think this election's a testament to the resiliency of Dan Patrick, despite mm-hmm. attempts by Scott Milder, who ran against him in the Republican primary, Bennett Ratliff, a former state representative and the son of a former lieutenant governor, and other people to kind of get these teachers to block vote mm-hmm. against Dan Patrick. What we saw across the state was far different. We saw teachers and other Republican voters go and vote for Dan Patrick and other Republicans up and down the ballot and give Dan Patrick the convincing win. Didn't win by the margin that Greg Abbott won by, but that's just a testament to the difference between Greg Abbott's campaign versus Dan Patrick's.
Right, exactly. And so, of course, you have the rest of the Republican statewide ticket, right? We have Sid Miller as Ag Commissioner, George P. Bush. You've got Ken Paxton, the Attorney General, all coming up successful on Tuesday night.
Absolutely. You know, Texas maintained its streak of not electing a Democrat, statewide since 1994. That record will be at least intact until 2020. And I think Republicans, you know, after this election, they've got a little bit of work to do, but I think the state is safely red all the way for the foreseeable future.
Excellent. Thank you for joining, Kerry.
Thanks, Brandon.
Moving on to the state legislative races, I have CEO of Empower Texans, Michael Quinn Sullivan. What did we see on Tuesday in the state legislative races across Texas?
Well, I think Kerry just did a great job of talking about the statewide races and where we saw that, you know, with various levels, the mm-hmm. Texas voters pushed back against having Democrats in statewide office. But, you know, by the time you filter down to the state legislative races, it was a rough night mm-hmm. for Republicans, and it was kind of indiscriminate when you look at those legislative races. It wasn't, you know, the so-called, you know, hard right. It wasn't the country clubbers, the moderates, the liberals, the conservatives. It was just people with an R next to their name who lost.
Right. And so kind of looking across the state, I guess Dallas County was the battleground. This is what we were looking at is sort of the biggest opportunity for Democrats. And Democrats did pretty well on Tuesday in Dallas County.
Yeah, look, you know, the Democrats, the big takeaway from this entire election in mm-hmm. Texas was that the Democrats turned out Democrat voters, and Democrat voters voted for Democrats. Republicans didn't make a very, particularly look in Dallas County, Republicans mm-hmm. didn't make a Republican sales pitch to Republican voters to vote for Republicans, and certainly not to independents. And, you know, and it was, again, it was a very bad night in Dallas County. Legislatively, Don Huffines mm-hmm. Lost his bid for re-election to the Texas Senate. Every Republican lost in their state house races except for Morgan Meyer, who barely won. Mm-hmm. And he barely won in the district. You know, the very Tony Highland Park should be—
Right. This is traditionally a very Republican stronghold, yeah.
As well as Angie Chinbutton. Now, I want to say this about Angie Chinbutton really quick. Angie Chinbutton, long-serving state, very nice lady. Right. Her voting record, kind of a mixed bag, but very nice lady. And I was actually working an early voting place for a friend of mine, and it happened to be a voting place where Angie Chinbutton had a lot of people, a lot of legislative districts coming to one early voting place. And I watched her work those polls, every person who came in knew her, and she knew them. And I think that's, you know, one takeaway for all this is legislators need to make sure they are doing the very hard work of building relationships in their communities, mm-hmm. including people who may not even live in their districts. But just because someone doesn't live in your district doesn't mean they don't know people who do.
Exactly. They can influence that. And I think we saw, you know, even before Tuesday's election, with the election of Pete Flores, of course, taking that Senate seat down in the South and West Texas, hard work is what it's gonna take, right, to win.
Hard work coupled with very clear messaging is what's going to win. I think that the messaging, Republican messaging, and as well as messaging by the individual legislator, plus just that hard work of connecting with your constituents and serving your constituents. Meanwhile, you move
to the west, mm-hmm. into Tarrant County.
A bad night, although we didn't see the same kind of losses legislatively in Tarrant County than Dallas County, but still a squeaker.
Well, Tarrant County being one of the last, the last Republican or considered Republican urban counties, actually, once the votes were tallied, Cruz barely losing to Beto there and having some coattails there with State Senator Connie Burton.
Yeah, Connie Burton, the big loss in Tarrant County was Connie Burton's loss in her bid for reelection. It's going to take time to figure out how that loss went down, other than, again, the blue wave hitting Texas and knocking people down, again, fairly indiscriminately.
Yeah, and it's not just the—
Because meanwhile, Kelly Hancock, a very strong conservative state senator, he won re-election fairly well. So, it didn't seem to be, voters were going in making those Democrat voters, the blue wave voters, the independents who maybe didn't have a long fraction, they weren't necessarily going in, I'm voting against Connie Burton. Those are just, in whatever reason, in that geography, they were going to vote D.
Right. And I think one of the big warning signs we saw was that, the blue wave, as they called it, was not just focused on the urban areas, right? You actually saw a lot of spread into the suburbs.
Right.
You saw that in Collin and Denton County, the DFW suburbs as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, Ron Simmons, a fellow known for, in at least in Austin, known for a couple of years ago, pushing, let's all wear purple ties, Republicans and Democrats, blue and red makes purple, and, pushing this bipartisanship, that didn't seem to help him last night, where, a guy who's been working to kind of get along, he lost what has always been a fairly reliably Republican seat.
Right, and Republicans also lost pretty big in Harris County as well. This is the biggest county in the state. Actually voted for Republicans statewide only 4 years ago, and we've seen the last two election cycles that they've taken a dive. A lot of Republicans, a couple of state legislators actually losing there too.
Yeah, Mike Schofield came down to, I think, less than 50 vote.
Yes.
Difference now. That's a race where our general counsel, Tony McDonald, and other observers are kind of urging people,
have a commentary with Tony on exactly that at the end of the program. And also Gary Elkins, another legislator down in that area.
Again, another one of those legislators who has been, he's certainly not been thought of by anyone as a movement conservative. Mm-hmm. You can add that to, in Travis County, Paul Workman, Williamson County, Tony Dale, guys who were just kind of go along to get along with the crony establishment, who were also taken out in this election.
Right. Okay. So if we look at these numbers now, some of them are very close, like the Schofield race. So we'll have to see how the numbers shake out there. But assuming what we know right now, it looks like we've lost 12 Republicans in the House. What does that mean for the legislative session going forward? Of course, the legislature is reconvening in Austin in January. What does this change? Does this change any of the dynamics in Austin?
Well, whenever you have a number shift, that does change things. But, we all get very, put our blinders on historically. Let's just go back 10 years, and there was a Republican bloodbath in 2008, mm-hmm. and it was 76 Republicans to 74 Democrats. It would have been 75-75, except for one state rep won by 15 votes, and that's how it got to be 76-74. This session, going into 2019, you're looking at having 80, 83, 84 Republicans.
Right.
So a much stronger number there. The real message is Democrats, like it's been since 2003, only get to do policy mischief with the approval of Republicans in leadership in the Texas House, which makes the leadership question coming up on December 1st for the Republican caucus all the more important.
Right. I think if you look at the numbers now, of course, we have the Republican caucus pledge, where Republican members have pledged to support a Republican candidate for Speaker of the House that election coming up. But now the number gets a little smaller. I think it's actually 9 Republicans now is all it takes to join with all of the Democrats in order to elect a Democrat choice for Speaker of the House.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, what members of the Republican caucus, the returning and the new members, let's not forget, we did pick up like Mays Middleton.
Yes.
They're on the Texas Strong Conservative. Jared Patterson in Denton County, same county where Ron Simmons lost. Jared Patterson won, is going to the Texas, again, Strong Conservative. Pat Fallon moving from the House.
Steve Toth, Montgomery County.
Yes, there were some bright spots. But all these Republicans are all going to have to look around and say, you know, do we want to enable the Democrats, or do we want to make a clear message? Dan Patrick made this impassioned point in his victory speech on election night that, you know, voters expect conservative reforms to move forward. And the Texas House is going to have to decide, do they want to be on the side of Texas, wanting Texas to be strong and brightly shining, or do we want to keep enabling the Californization that the Democrats offer?
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Michael.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's news digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Moving right along to Central Texas, joined right now by Central Texas Bureau Chief Jacob Asmussen. What's going on in Central Texas right now? Travis County, what's happening there?
Yeah, you know, Brandon, if there was a fire in your house and I saw you trying to put it out by pouring gasoline on it, I would think you were crazy. But that's exactly what the voters of Austin did Tuesday night. There was about $1 billion in new debt, and they approved all of it, even though they're in the midst of a huge affordability crisis.
Well, yeah, everybody knows Austin, one of the most liberal, if not the most liberal spot in Texas right now, adding a ton of debt right through those bonds. And I know there was an alphabet soup of propositions on the ballot. Not all of them were bonds, though. Some of them were for other measures, right?
Yep, there was actually an efficiency audit on the ballot, which would have brought in a comprehensive third-party review of all of the city operations and budget. So they would have reviewed the $4 billion budget of the city to identify any inefficiencies and improve functionality.
Something that you know, most every business would do, I think, makes sense to a lot of people when they hear it.
Absolutely.
How did that fare?
That did not fare too well. It got smoked 58-41.
Now, that's really interesting. I mean, you saw this interesting advertising campaign against that by the opposition, by the city, who essentially did not want the audit, right? I don't think they wanted people to discover, you know, the unknown, right? And you saw an ad campaign where they were saying, "Don't Trump my Austin," not ever talking about what the actual the proposition was for.
Absolutely. Literally none of the messaging against the proposition was about the audit itself. It was all about all of these rabbit trails that had nothing to do with getting a third-party audit to improve the city's functionality.
Right. And one last point about Austin, there was a mayor's race as well, right?
There was, and the incumbent, Steve Adler, won by a landslide.
Okay, and that was a six-way race, I think. So
it was.
This is him heading into his now second term. Going a little bit north in Williamson County. Now, this is a county, by the way, that has been considered, you know, pretty reliably Republican, but is kind of take it a blue shift.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. All of the Austinites within the city are being forced out because of the left-wing policies in the city, and yet they're trying to bring the same thing to the suburbs, to Williamson County. And so we saw, I think, a lot of the Beto effect, mm-hmm. people just voting straight party Democrat. So we saw some congressmen, some state reps that are normally reliably Republican, they lost.
Right. A big bond in Round Rock as well, correct?
Absolutely. A very controversial school bond was passed last night, $500 million.
Yes, it's really interesting to see what's happened in Williamson County. I mean, a lot of people have likened it to what has happened to Virginia, which has become a blue state, but it's because of Northern Virginia, the D.C. suburbs, right, where you know, all the unaffordability has spread those folks into Northern Virginia, and they've brought the same policies with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why it makes it all the more important that we keep them accountable.
Exactly. Thank you, Jacob.
Absolutely.
Next up, we have Charles Blaine, the Houston Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Charles, what happened on election night in Texas's biggest county?
Yeah. Hey, Brandon. So election night was a long night, and it was a pretty depressing night for Harris County Republicans. Democrats really swept the county. They did it in 16, but they really came back and did it even worse this time.
A lot of down ballot races, especially, right? I know Harris County has one of the longest ballots with tens and dozens of judges and judicial spots, all of them wiped out by Democrats on Tuesday night.
Yeah, so our ballot got 18 pages long, and we had 59 judicial races where mm-hmm. not a single Republican won a race. All 59 Republican candidates lost, all by a roughly, 7 to 10% margin. And they didn't end there. You know, our county offices went down as well. County clerk, district clerk, mm-hmm. county treasurer, and county judge.
Yeah, even the county judge, Ed Emmett, who has not been a friend for conservatives. He actually endorsed the Democrat for lieutenant governor in this election. Thought that he'd be able to reach across the aisle, get Democrats to vote for him. It looks like the straight ticket voting, I mean, it cut right through him as well.
It certainly did, and I think that's what shocked everybody the most. You know, he has not been a friend to conservatives, especially mm-hmm. recently, kind of going back to this summer when he held a massive bond election in the middle of the summer, and then, yes, more recently, coming out against Dan Patrick. I mean, he has not been a friend to conservatives, and it showed that that effort to woo over Democrat voters did not do him any good. And he got swept out as well by 27-year-old Lena Hidalgo.
Who was a community organizer, I think, right?
Right, yeah. So she's an interesting one. She has a background in education and hasn't done much work other than a little bit, like you said, community organizing. And she is currently a translator in the medical center. That's her job. So, yeah, she's in for a heck of a time, to say the least.
Well, what about Houston specifically? Sylvester Turner sort of got dealt a loss, the mayor there, with one of the propositions.
Right. So we had two propositions on the ballot, Proposition A and Proposition B. We've talked a lot about Proposition A, but mm-hmm. truly, whether it passed or failed, nothing would have changed. But right. Proposition B was the big deal. It was the firefighters' huge fight to get equal pay with police officers. And Turner has launched a monstrous campaign against them. Town halls where he's, just ranted against them, used his seat in council to go against them, commercials, and they won. I mean, they won by about 10 to 15 points at the last time I checked. And, this is kind of a mandate for them. Now they get to get their pay parity like they've wanted so badly.
What's been the reaction from Turner and the rest of the city council that opposed this?
Well, Turner has, not stopped swinging since this happened. The second that the numbers came out, he released a press statement, probably previously prepared because he knew this was going to fail. pass.
Right.
And he said that he was going to have to lay off firefighters. And today he was supposed to take up a surprise council agenda item to hire a law firm for $1.3 million to challenge the outcome of this vote. And he delayed it because council pushed back and said, you are essentially, to put it in the words of one council member, he said, you are sticking a middle finger to the voters if you do this. So they delayed it for 2 weeks. So we'll see what happens with that.
We'll see what happens. A lot of changes for a county that just elected Republicans statewide 4 years ago. Thank you so much for updating us, Charles.
Thank you.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. you can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
Should we take election night results as gospel? What happens when the numbers don't add up? Tony McDonald joins us in this week's commentary, reminding campaigns to check the math.
As Americans in 2018, we're very impatient with our elections. We want results now. Exit pollsters predict the results before the polls even close, and the networks are quick to declare a winner, sometimes just minutes after the first results start rolling in. Good losers are expected to call and concede before the clock even strikes midnight. But in our rush for results, are we inviting error into our elections? With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Tony McDonald. We learned a startling lesson in the 2016 election. No one can accurately predict election results, and it also seems no one sees it as their job to make sure the math adds up when it comes to counting the votes in Texas elections. In the 2016 Republican primary, there was a contentious race for state representative in Hill County. The race ultimately came down to just a couple hundred votes out of thousands. Or was it 100 votes? Or was it just 50? You see, we don't really know the exact results 2 years later. That's because the numbers reported to the Secretary of State on election night simply didn't add up. Aaron Harris, an election integrity activist with Direct Action Texas, started looking at the numbers and found that Hill County reported 1,800 more votes were cast than the number of voters the county reported showed up at the polls. It stands to reason that the number of votes should always equal the number of voters, but that wasn't the case in Hill County. As Harris began looking at the election, there were all kinds of problems. Some of the sign-in sheets were missing. One other set of records showed one voter who apparently voted four times, and eight other voters who voted twice. The county's electronic voting machine vendor concluded that many of the county's early voting machines were never cleared before Election Day, causing those early votes to be duplicated. And the county's mail-in ballots may have been entered into the machines as many as three times. All of this should have been caught on election night. Someone should have been looking at the numbers and realized there was a problem when the number of votes didn't match the number of voters. But instead, it took months working to unravel the Gordian knot and an investigation from the state's attorney general. The AG's conclusion? There are inadequate safeguards to prevent such negligent counting errors in future elections. But surely the situation was isolated to just Hill County, right? Wrong. A study conducted by the Texas Senate found that the numbers in nearly every county in Texas failed to add up to one degree or another. One county reported exactly twice the number of votes as it reported voters. You can guess what mistake they made in the election. The lesson to take away is this. We can't just trust election result numbers because they show up on the Secretary of State's or our local election administrator's website. All Texans, but particularly those who are involved in campaigns, are encouraged to take a hard look at the election results before they declare victory or concede defeat, and certainly before they pass on the very narrow window for a recount or other type of election contest. Patience and deliberation are more important than ever in this election. This year has been filled with evidence of Democrat voter fraud schemes being conducted from South Texas up to Dallas-Fort Worth. Election results have been voided. Elected officials in question have resigned or retired, and some of the fraudsters have been sent to jail. With rampant mistakes and, even worse, outright fraud in our elections, it's up to individual Texans to ensure election results are accurate. Simply put, the results need to add up. They need to pass the sniff test, and if they don't, that means quick action needs to be taken. Hire a lawyer, get the raw data, and ask tough questions. The legitimacy of our Republican form of government demands that every voter's vote is counted, but also that it isn't stolen, the votes aren't cast fraudulently, and that votes are never counted more than once. This election, you can do your part by making sure the election results add up and quickly asking questions when, not if, they don't. I'm Tony McDonald with the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. As always, you can listen to the show, download it on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play. My name is Brandon Waltons. Follow me on Twitter at bwaltons, at bwaltens. Tony McDonald will be back in the studio hosting. Until next week, stay vigilant.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.